Hi, everybody. Want to let you know this is a daily show. Very different because we hold no punches here. So look for it. Truth bomb number one. Congress gives the people who give them money everything they paid for. Truth bomb number two. The IMF predicts Russia's economy will surpass all of Europe as well as that of Canada and the United States. Truth bomb number three. Israel fires back at Iran in what is appearing like a computerized robotic drone war. Is the future here? And how scary is this? I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. I think, you tell me if I'm right or wrong, but what the U.S. Congress did this weekend will, as one very respected U.S. president once said, live in infamy. Put another way, they took the money and they ran. Not once, not twice, not three times. They did it four times. Count them. One, two, three, four. Let me take you through it in case you missed it. I doubt you did, but let me just take you through it. Because you're not going to hear this take on CNN or Fox or any place like that. It appears that no country in the world gives more to our politicians to compel their support than Israel. We know that, right? We've done that story. You know that story. So what did the U.S. Congress do this weekend? They voted to send $28 billion of your taxes, the taxes you pay, to Israel so they continue the war, they can continue the war with the Palestinians. Number two. U.S. tech companies do not like TikTok, and they would like to have TikTok eliminated. So they lobbied. That means they paid Congress to go after TikTok. And what did Congress do this weekend? They passed a measure to ban TikTok. Cha-ching! So much for the free market principles of a healthy competition, right? Okay, now let's go to numbers three and four, as I promised you. The arms industry in the United States bankrolls influential think tanks where members of Congress get jobs and get their support and information. They also hire thousands of lobbyists, so many, in fact, that there are now more of them, more lobbyists representing military contractors in Washington than there are elected officials in Washington. Put that on your funkin' Wagnall. And they make donations as well. Legal bribes do these contractors in the tens of millions of dollars to members of Congress. So what did they get this weekend for all of that? Well, perpetual wars, conflicts, so they can make more tanks and more planes and more bullets and make more money off of those conflicts with countries like China and Russia. And Congress this weekend, yes, they passed a measure to send close to $70 billion in taxes collected from Americans to Ukraine and Taiwan. In other words, to feed conflicts with China and Russia. Look, I mean, I've just taken you through all four things. This Saturday, they had four people who were paying them, and four people got what they wanted, or four entities, I should say. I guess when it comes to U.S. politicians, we really do get what they pay for. But in a strange way, Congress's aggressive stance toward Russia, including its all-out assault on the Russian economy, it may have actually backfired, we're learning. How do we know that? Well, we know that because CNBC, one of the most followed business networks in the United States, has come out and said so, confirming what Russian President Vladimir Putin predicted last December. Interestingly enough, Putin's comments back then were ignored by most Western media sources like CNBC. You actually had to go to different, you had to go somewhere else in the world if you wanted to hear what President Putin had said. For example, you had to go to India to hear Mr. Putin's prediction.
The most important indicator of economic growth is a growth of gross domestic product. By the end of the year, it is expected to be 3.5%. That's a good indicator. It means we have bounced back from last year's decline.
Wow, that was back in December. Could Putin have been right? After all, most Americans were under the impression at the time that he said that the Russian economy was in the dumps. close to collapse because of the war with Ukraine and the sanctions imposed on them by the United States and other NATO countries. We were hitting them really hard to make sure they stayed down. And we were told, yep, they're down. They're never going to be able to get up again. Oops. President Putin comes out. He predicts this isn't going to happen. We're going to be fine. We're going to rebuild our economy. Then he went even further. He went on. Did you remember he did the interview with Tucker Carlson? We showed you some of that. And while he's talking to Tucker Carlson, he's boasting that Russia's economy will and has surpassed most of the economies of all the countries in Europe.
Russia was the first economy in Europe last year, despite all the sanctions and restrictions. Is it normal from your point of view? Sanctions, restrictions, impossibility of payments in dollars, being cut off from SWIFT services, sanctions against our ships carrying oil, sanctions against airplanes, sanctions in everything, everywhere. The largest number of sanctions in the world which are applied against Russia. And we have become Europe's first economy during this time.
I mean, I doubted that what he was saying was true at the time, only because I didn't know, right? Of course, the Tucker Carlson interview was dismissed by most of my colleagues completely. They never even played it. They never even mentioned it. Those who work here in the United States and in Western media. Until now, here's the article I'm talking about. This is the one that just appeared on CNBC this morning with the headline, which pretty much repeats the Russian president's statement. Here's the quote. Russia is expected to grow faster than all advanced economies this year. In fact, according to the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, and the CNBC report, Russia's GDP growth will hit 3.2%. How good is that? Let's compare. I've got this chart I want to show you. And in this chart, you see how it stacks up, how Russia compares with GDP-wise, by the way, to other G7 nations. Look at Russia's numbers. And look who's below them. The U.S., under Russia, somewhere around 2% GDP growth. Japan, somewhere around 1%. Canada, around 1.5. France, around 1%. Italy, UK, just above 0.5%. And at the bottom of the list, Germany, at barely 0.5 percentage point. And you know what's most ironic about this chart? Is that all of those countries make up the G7, right? It used to be called the G8. Guess why it's not called the G8 anymore? Because they all got together and decided that Russia didn't belong with the big boys. Well, look at it now. It appears that Russia's economic growth will surpass all of theirs. Joining us now to discuss this is Executive Director of the Ron Paul Institute, Daniel McAdams. Dan, I mean, I don't know. Be careful what you wish for. Here we have all of these countries hitting Russia really hard and promising us here in America, don't worry, we're going to bury these guys. I mean, I didn't even believe this when I heard some people report it. I was doubting Putin's a politician, whether he was being real honest with those figures once too, only because I'm a journalist and I wanted to double check. Here we have the IMF come out this weekend as well as CNBC and say, yeah, Russia's economy is superseding all the economies in Europe, including ours and Canada's. You say what?
Well, the wrong conclusion to draw is that sanctions are good because they help benefit a country. That's kind of a protectionist mentality. Mm-hmm. The sanctions didn't help Russia. But what they did, ironically, is they enabled Russia to sell the products that they would normally sell to places like Europe at a much higher price. They would export petroleum and oil to India. India would refine it and sell it back to Germany at 2 or 3 times the rate. So everyone profits except for Germany, as we've seen from your chart, which has gone down the tubes. Even Ukraine buys diesel from Russia at a huge markup. So it's not to say that protectionism and sanctions are good. It's to say that if you have the ability, if you have the industrial base, you can get around. If you have the resources, you can get around it. And if you're forced into a corner, you're going to find alternatives to SWIFT and other economic tools and use them for your own benefit, which is what Russia has done.
Well, I'm glad you made that point. And here's why. There are other countries who have been the victims of sanctions from Western countries, including the United States. Well, one of them is the country that I was born in, Cuba. I mean, Cuba's been under the thumb of the United States with some horrible sanctions now for the past 50, 60, 70 years. And in that case, they have not been able to get themselves out of it because nobody can do business with them as long as the United States says no. Venezuela is, I mean, literally in a bit of a economic death knell, has been so for quite some time now, and it's because of the sanctions and the castigations that have been put upon it by the United States. So I don't know what we can take from this other than perhaps a large country like Russia is able to combat these kinds of sanctions. Smaller countries, maybe not so much.
And, you know, talk about unintended consequences. In Russia's case, they are actually richer. But in Cuba's case, the unintended consequences, and I was there, I talked to officials when I took a congressional trip to Cuba. Every shortcoming they have in their society is blamed on the sanctions. Oh, you don't have a TV? No, what's the sanctions? Things aren't working well. It's the sanctions. So it actually helps keep the regime in power, strengthen the regimes in place.
Do you see any place where, and I know you've had lots of discussions with Ron Paul about this, where it may be appropriate to deploy sanctions against a country? When do you do that, if ever?
Well, sanctions are an act of war. So if you're at war with a country, you should forbid trading with that country. That just kind of makes sense. But, you know, there's this perception that sanctions are one step before war. But when you interfere with the trade and economic activity of a country, is by definition war. So the left likes sanctions a lot because they feel like they're going to punish someone without actually going to war, the left that is anti-war. And that's not the case because they are an act of war.
Well, in the case of Ukraine, for example, we know that the United States in 2002, 2014 was very much involved in Ukrainian politics. Most people would argue that they interfered. Some people would go as far as to say that they actually tried to start a coup because they didn't like the guy who was in power there, or the guy who was a leader of Ukraine at the time, and they wanted to change him. And that's the famous Victoria Nuland tapes that we've all either heard or heard of. Now we come back after doing something like that with sanctions to make sure we can, you know, bury Russia's actions against Ukraine even more. How do you describe that scenario?
Well, it's a situation where the so-called experts in the Beltway in D.C., they're all in a circle and they all listen to each other talk and they don't listen to anyone else. They don't call me up or they don't call Rick Sanchez and say, hey, is this true that Russia is taking chips out of washing machines because they don't have anything to make weapons with? I mean, is it true that the ruble is rubble? Because that's what everyone is telling me that I know. Well, maybe you just know the wrong people. Maybe you should branch out a little bit more and think a little bit more for yourself. And it's funny on one hand, but on the other hand, there are real consequences, real life consequences to this kind of circular mentality in Washington, D.C. And that's, I think, what is leading us toward war.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because as I was, I think you heard my intro, and I mentioned that one of the things that the military contractors do is they own all the think tanks. They own all the think tanks and put their people on those think tanks. Those are the people in the think tanks, right, who then talk to Congress and give them their advice, but they're actually working for, you know, General Dynamics or something. And they also send those people to CNN and Fox News to be the so-called experts to tell us what's really going on in the world. So they're controlling the message on top of giving money to the politicians.
That's exactly true. And I'm glad you said the media because it's so important. I mean, there was a time in our recent memory, Rick, that when you retired as a general officer in the Army, or if you retired as a high-ranking CIA official, you would quietly enjoy your retirement. You might move to Loudoun County and have a little farmette and have a nice life. Well, it's not that way anymore. Your massive pension that you have from your job is just not enough. So you go to Fox News and you go to CNN and you go to the other networks and you help drive the narrative because everything in D.C. is narrative-based. It's not the reality-based community. Unlike how it was claimed when George W. Bush was president, it's a narrative-based community.
In fact, presently, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, I looked it up, and he has like a $4 to $7 million home on the ocean on some private island in South Carolina. Since when does a general live on a private island on the ocean?
when he gets us into the right wars that make a lot of profits for his friends. And that's what's driving everything. And you mentioned the money for Ukraine coming from taxes. It's actually even worse than that, because it's not collected out of our pockets directly. It's the most insidious tax of all, which is the inflation tax. This money is conjured out of thin air. And what it does, obviously, Rick, and you know this very well, is it makes the dollars that you already have worth that much less. So it hurts the poor and the working class much more than the people we're talking about in D.C.
Dan McAdams, thanks so much. Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue the discussion, speaking specifically about some of the strategies that are used by the people who are able to turn the people in Congress. Oh, and we should also mention the three other things that Congress did besides Ukraine and why they did it. We'll be right back.
What is Bharat? Is it a travel ad? Is it a Bollywood poster? Is it the deepest yoga center in the world? Or is it something deeper, more complex, multifaceted? Let's talk without cliches. Let's talk Bharat.
A new video of alleged abuse by an officer. Today, a sheriff's deputy in Columbia, South Carolina, forcibly removed a student from a classroom at Spring Valley High School.
I saw him just talking to her, whispering to her, and initially, you know, I didn't think it was a problem because I knew that she was just this quiet student in the class.
Someone looked at the police officer and says, here is law enforcement at its worst. Clearly attacking, abusing power and influence. And then there are others who says this is what's wrong with public school. Poorly behaved, undisciplined black children.
He was there enforcing a law that made it a crime to, quote, disturb schools in any way. That means any disturbance that any kid causes in school is a crime.
Using force is never pretty, but necessary at times. People are never gonna change their minds. Some people will never change their minds about the video. They think I was wrong, and that's it.
It's hard to imagine, as we return here on Direct Impact, anything like what happened this weekend. I mean, has there ever been a case, I ask, where Congress has more blatantly set out to give the people who pay them money, big money, exactly what they want in all cases? Think about it. I mean, the big tech companies wanted for TikTok to be eliminated, to be banned, because it's competition for them. The big tech companies in the United States who control social media, they wanted them out. So they gave money and influenced and lobbied Congress to have them do it. And what did Congress do on Saturday? They said, we're going to ban TikTok. I mean, the military contractors, as Dan McAdams was just explaining, have been giving a ton of money, a ton of money to Congress, because they want them to have these continual wars, you know? And what better war? Iran is perfect. China, ideal. And Russia, yeah, they're the perfect enemy. Make them a foil, and then they get more money, and hopefully they'll blow up more tanks so they can make more tanks and more warplanes and more bullets, etc. So they gave Congress a ton of money, and Congress said, okay, fine, we're going to give Ukraine and Taiwan $70 billion. Here's another one. I mean, all of this happened on the same day. Israel, no country on the history of the planet has ever paid another country so much money to have them basically do their will. That's what Israel does with its lobby. We all know that. It's no secret. So what did the Congress do on Saturday? $28 billion for Israel. I mean, man, I got to tell you, Dan, this is absolutely crazy. I feel like I need to get on a mountaintop and scream this to the American people. How does this just continue? How does this happen?
Well, the TikTok ban, by the way, is also related to the Israel issue, because Jonathan Greenblatt, the head of ADL, was recorded on a phone call saying, we've got a TikTok problem. The problem with TikTok is a lot of young people are making videos because they're sympathizing more and more with the Palestinians, and they're concerned about what's happening in Gaza, and that's destroying their narrative. Israel, I think people, even people who are pro-Israel, would say that they've really kind of botched the PR after they went in after October 7th, and TikTok is part of the problem. So interestingly enough, there's kind of a dovetail there. But you're right, Saturday was a terrible day for America. If you actually love this country like we both do, Rick, they gave a ton of money away. But as you know, hardly any of this money is going to Ukraine. And we all know this. Even Zelensky said, this money that America passed, it will stay in America. Because it's going right across the Beltway to the Beltway bandits who are going to manufacture new tanks to get blown up, as you very well pointed out. So this is more like corporate welfare with a little bit of sprinkle on top for Zelensky to get a couple new cars in the house, maybe.
Well, what do you make of this new speaker, this guy Johnson? What an interesting bird this dude is. First, he comes out and he says, it's about America first. It's about controlling the border. It's about securing the border. It's about taking care of some of the needs of Americans. Now we move forward a couple of months, and it's the hell with Americans, the hell with the border. I'm going to back these four measures. How do you do that? What happened to this guy? Is it the same guy?
People are wondering if they have something on him. At the very least, he's a nutcase. I mean, because the other thing we didn't mention is the FISA reauthorization, and it's FISA on steroids, because it redefines, without getting into the woods, it redefines how the government can spy on you without a warrant. They can use your plumber and your gardener and other things. They weren't able to do that before. But Speaker Johnson was quoted. He said, well, you know, when I was on the Judiciary Committee, I saw thousands of abuses by the FBI, thousands of them. But then I had a briefing from our intelligence community, and I realized how important it is to do this, which just shows he's either incredibly naive and gullible, or somehow he's in on it. But we know for a fact that the intelligence communities routinely lie. They lie to members of Congress. They lie through their teeth. Anyone who's forgotten Iraq, Libya, et cetera, all these briefings. It's one of the reasons why Dr. Paul never went to these classified briefings, because he knew it was nothing but a pack of lies.
After a while, it just looks like, I mean, I guess this guy Johnson, maybe we shouldn't blame him. It's his job, and he's going to do whatever puts more money in his pocket. I just looked at Open Secrets this morning, and apparently he's raised $9 million from different donors, et cetera. So I guess after a while, they're not there to basically represent you and me, Dan. They're just—it's a job. They're no different than being a lawyer or a doctor or anything else. It's a job. Who, you know, if I can do an operation that pays me more than the other operation, I'll do that operation. Or if it's a lawyer, I'll handle this guy's case because he has more money than the poor guy over here. So, I guess this is what we get, right? It's just the capitalist system.
Well, it's not the capitalist system, it's the crony capitalist system. Yeah. That's a big difference, you know. But what Speaker Johnson did is very, very unusual. And I spent 11 or so years on the Hill, and I had never seen it. The only way he got the Ukraine bill passed was he relied on Democrats. He actually lost. Among the people who elected him Speaker, i.e. Republicans, he lost that vote. He reached over, he rigged how the Rules Committee makes the rules for those as well. And I don't want to get too far into it, but he overran the Republicans on the Rules Committee and depended on Democrats on the Rules Committee to pass out a rule to bring it to the floor. That is extremely, extremely rare. So the Republicans are furious with him. They want to get rid of him. People like Thomas Massie, who's a patriot and a hero, he wants to see the backside of Mike Johnson as fast as possible.
I like this Massie guy, by the way. Hey, there's something else I want to share with you. Over the weekend, Israel fired back at Iran after Iran had fired at them for bombing their Syria embassy and assassinating two Iranian leaders. It's crazy what's happening, and it looks dangerous to me. Considering this war going back and forth between Israel and Iran, by the way, it's not really Israel, it's us, but whatever, we'll pretend it's Israel. They're having this battle with drones and computers and blasting things out of the air. What appears to me the most evident is that Israel is going easy on Iran to fulfill a promise to the U.S. so that the U.S. will then look the other way when they attack Rafah. I mean, talk about an interesting negotiation where it appears that once again Bibi Netanyahu is going to be able to get what he wants. As I see this, he went to the U.S. and said, look, I want to attack Rafah. They said, no, we don't want you to attack Rafah. And finally he said, what if I go easy on Israel and I just do this little thing that I just described? And they said, well, then, okay, you can attack Rafah. It looks like that's what is going on here.
And what's disgusting is the Biden administration is not telling Israel, don't attack Rafah because you've killed enough innocent women and children. They're saying, don't attack Rafah. It's going to hurt my reelection campaign.
Yes.
You know, that's what it's all about. Talk about the cynicism of someone like that who can so cold-hearted about the pain and suffering and slaughter that's going on there. They only think of their reelection chances. It's disgusting.
What do you, are you, you know, I started looking at this thing this weekend. Are you as concerned as I am? We're down to about 2 minutes here. But this thing with these drones and these missiles, and they're shooting them up expecting they're going to be shot down. It's all done through computers and animation and AI. Where the hell is this taking us, man?
The scary thing is it normalizes slaughter and warfare. And we had this a lot when we started using drones from people who operated them in, for example, New Mexico when they went over to Iraq and Afghanistan and assassinated people without any human contact. I think that's incredibly, incredibly dangerous. And I think we've seen the PTSD in the people who are not in the trenches, but they're basically playing a computer game. They're getting as bad as anyone else. So it does something to your soul and to your mind when you kill people, no matter if you do it from a dark room in New Mexico or in a trench in Donbass.
Daniel McAdams, as usual, my thanks to you, sir, for sharing your wisdom with us. We'll look forward to talking to you once again.
Thank you, Rick.
Before I go, I want to remind you of our mission here. It's pretty simple. We try and de-silo the world by telling all the truths, not just the one that I want to be stuck on. Truths don't live in little boxes. We try to develop stories through and through, with different ideas, different perspectives, things you'll never hear anywhere else. This is Direct Impact, and I am Rick Sanchez.